I don't even know why I did it.
His head returns to his palms. I want to say, I do. I get why you did it, and it's for all the reasons my own lines got blurry with you and everything else. Instead, without thinking it through, I say, I knew Leo had relapsed. I ran into him in New York, and he was high, and he promised me he'd get better. Ben's face flies up, the rest of his body following.
What? Wait, you what?
I knew Leo had relapsed. I press my lips together, offer a small, defiant shrug. I guess we both had our secrets.
You what? I could have fucking helped him, Tatum.
You couldn't have. His face morphs from angry to astonished and back to angry again.
How could you know that? How the hell could you know what I could and couldn't have done?
You don't get it, I say. We can't save other people. They can only save themselves. We can only save ourselves. I turn to go.
You are not just leaving now, he yells, after dropping this bomb on me.
I glance back and see him frozen in rage. My hand mimics dropping a grenade. Boom.
33. Ben. December 2000. Amanda calls just before I slide on my coat to leave for New Year's Eve. Caller ID alerts me to the 415 area code, and I check my watch because I don't want to be late. I can spare 3, maybe 4 minutes. Despite my better instincts, I press the talk button. Hey, I say. It's me, she replies. I know. The clock on the microwave in my parents' kitchen tells me it's 8:23. I told Tatum I'd pick her up by 9 so we could wedge our way into Times Square by midnight, which I still can't believe I've agreed to. This is practically highway robbery, I'd said when she proposed it. I'd stopped at the bar to thank her for her work on Romantica, and she'd said, Well, as payback, you have to come to Times Square with me for New Year's Eve. Like a date? I grinned. I might let you kiss me, if you're lucky, she said. Then her eyes widened and she laughed her machine gun staccato and slapped a hand over her mouth. Oh my god, sorry. I don't know where that came from. I sip a lukewarm beer abandoned on the kitchen counter. Leo must have opened it as part of his pre-party celebration. 3 minutes, I tell myself. Then you hang up and are gone. Leo wanders in, his coat zippered, his gloves already on, and swipes the beer from my hands and chugs it. Then notices I'm on the phone and shoots me a quizzical look. Amanda, I mouth. He rolls his eyes and slits his throat with his gloved finger. I flip him off, then shoo him out of the room. He turns and whispers, Hurry up, dude. We gotta stop and get Caroline. He says this as if I have any idea who Caroline is. One of the ever-revolving lithe young women from high school, or now his dorm or fraternity house up at Columbia. Amanda starts on the other end of the line, 3,000 miles away. Then she falls silent. We haven't spoken since she left for California in June. Technically, we broke up. I broke up with her in February, but I did it solely to get out in front of it. The fact that she was leaving, the fact that she chose a residency over me, it didn't feel real back then. We still occasionally slept together, still sometimes found ourselves crying to each other in the dark hours of the night when one of us couldn't sleep, and the permanence of her move, or my decision, or hers, would set in. I just wanted to call to wish you a happy new year, she says finally. Thanks. You too. Leo circles back and whispers, Hang up, dude. This isn't just some casual call. Like, girls don't call on New Year's Eve to say, Hey. I press my finger into my other ear to ignore him. Listen to Amanda's quiet crying through the line. I think she's crying anyway, but I don't want to ask because now I have 2 minutes before I'm pulled toward someone new, toward Tatum, and I'm not sure I want to get sidetracked. But we dated for 3 years, a lifetime in your early 20s. We'd made plans for this millennium. We were supposed to be in Cancun right now, not on separate coasts making lonely phone calls that wouldn't change anything. I was going to be the next Scorsese, right from New York, tell New York stories, build a family here, invite Leo over on the weekends to play the part of overly indulgent uncle to our 2.5 children. She was going to work at NYU or Mount Sinai, eventually shifting to private pediatrics so she'd have more time for all things that mattered. But then she'd applied exclusively to schools out west, and it became clear, then clearer, that maybe the story I'd spun about the two of us wasn't much more than something akin to the scripts that I dreamed up, too. She said she just needed some time to live on her own. I broke up with her, and gave her that. Though it didn't make it easier, of course. Didn't mean that you stop loving someone just because you've split and said goodbye. She left in June, and I refocused on my work. Drafting, then redrafting Romantica. Writing it for her. No, writing it about her. Those were two different things. About all the ways that love goes wrong, than all the ways that it corrects itself. When I really thought about it, maybe I was writing it about me. About how love disappoints you, but also finds its way back to you. I keep thinking about Cancun, Amanda says, gathering her breath and composure. That would have been fun. Yeah, I say. It's freezing here. 1 minute on the clock. Then I have to get Tatum.
You going out? Big plans? A wild party?
She laughs, though it rings hollow. Times Square.
Shut up!
She laughs for real now. I swear. Don't ask.
You'd never be caught dead in Times Square. You always wanted to stay in, fall asleep on a couch.
I guess things change. You and me, Times Square, Cancun, everything.
Wow, she says. It must be for something special.
I want to correct her. Someone special. Who might want to kiss me, and who announces such things like she's surprising herself for doing so, which surprises me. And I'm learning I like that in a partner. But I don't correct her. Don't say anything because it's Amanda, and my stomach is churning, and my brain is jumbled, and my adrenaline is sending me uncertain signs.
I miss you, she says. I guess that's what I was really calling to say.
I chew on my lip. I miss her too. But now there is Tatum. And if Amanda had called a few weeks ago, before Tatum starred in Romantica, and before I stopped by the bar to thank her, and before... whatever else. I don't know. Maybe things would have been different. Maybe I'd be willing to forgive her, or move to San Francisco, or just have flown out for the holidays and slept with her again just because. But she didn't call a few weeks ago, and now Tatum is waiting for me to take her to Times Square and kiss her. I should go, I say.
Okay.
Happy New Year, Amanda. She's silent, and so am I. It's been 6 months, and my foot is out the door to Tatum. But that doesn't change the swell of sickly nostalgia for what you once had. How easy it is to revisit those softer spots in your heart for someone who once occupied it.
I wish we were in Cancun, Ben,
she says, after my final minute has expired. But we're not, I say.
That doesn't make me not wish it anyway.
I know. Leo reappears in the kitchen and signals for me to hang the fuck up.
I guess our timing was wrong,
she says. Something like that, I reply, just before I click off for real.
34. Tatum. December 2015. How do you divide a lifetime? Where do you begin? With the items that don't matter to each of you, or the ones that matter most? If we can agree on the tangential things, the lamps in the bedroom, the treadmill in the gym, will we agree on the bigger stuff? The painting we bought from that artist in Austin on the road trip, the necklace you got me after Pride and Prejudice, the watch I bought you for your 40th birthday, Joey's schedule, our sanity? The moving trucks came on a dreary day in February. I was scheduled to be in the edit bay that day, but canceled at the last minute. For Joey's sake, though he was at school, and for the sake of not making us hate each other more than we already did, I stayed home, then shuffled around the house, trying to remain out of the way of the movers, and Ben, but there all the same. It felt like I had to show up for that, for Ben, for us. He was moving to an apartment only 2 miles away, but it might as well have been across the ocean. When the truck pulled away, Ben stood in the doorway, his hands tucked into his pockets, the lines on his face pointing downward. The rain fell behind him, clattering off the roof of his Prius. He started to say something, but then stopped, so I started to say something, and also stopped. Neither of us met the other's eyes, and he stared at the doormat, and then, wordlessly, spun around and left. I watched him go, and once he had, I crawled into bed with Monster and wept like I hadn't since my mom died. It was bad enough we were broken. It was even worse that we couldn't look at each other, could no longer see anything about the other that we understood or thought was worth preserving. Now, 10 months later, Susan McMahon, my lawyer, insists that I be unemotional. Or, if I can't, to let her handle the details. But how can a divorce be anything other than emotional? I ask her that, clutching the Perrier her assistant has brought, and she shakes her head and says, "Actors are particularly terrible at divorce. There's an irony there." "What's the irony?" I ask. "That all the reasons your marriage was great are also all the reasons it goes to shit." She says this with a little shrug, like it's just business, which to her it is. She handles dozens of these high-profile catastrophes a year. The Hollywood Reporter just ran a piece on her. She owns a home in Cabo, an apartment in St. Moritz. It's good to be Susan McMahon. It's less good to be sitting across the desk from her. "Ben and I were different." She raises her eyebrows, as if to say, "That's what everyone thinks. That's the lie we tell ourselves in order to survive." Piper, Scooter, and Emily, their daughter, fly out to stay with me for the holiday. Helen, Ben's mom, and Ron are also in town to see Ben and Joey. Because Ben and I are trying to be civil, even kind, I invite them over to the house for Christmas dinner. Joey had been with Ben the few days prior, then Constance retrieved him from Ben's apartment and returned him to me for Christmas Eve before she and her kids left for the week to visit her own extended family, a 3-hour drive north. "You don't have to send Nanny. I'll drop him," he texted me. "Please don't." I typed it quickly and realized, only after I hit send, that he'd misinterpret my intention. It wasn't that I couldn't bear to see him, it was just easier this way. With the paparazzi's long lenses hovering in trees to spy over our wall, with the mixed messages it sent my emotional system when he loitered in the foyer, attempting small talk. "Okay," he replied. My dad, Scooter, and Joey watch football in the screening room upstairs, which I almost never use, and Piper sits on the living room floor with Emily, reminding her to be gentle with Monster, who is old now and worries me constantly. How long he has left, how I'll ever make the decision to say goodbye. The goodbye with Ben took all the stoicism out of me. I already know that I won't have it in me to sit with Monster, rubbing his ears while he is lulled into a permanent sleep. Maybe I will ask Ben to come with me, but that is part of my old life, when I felt like I could lean into him, and I try not to remember much of that old life anymore. I'm too busy mourning it to allow much of it back in. I find that I have forgiven him for Amanda, which surprises me. When he insisted, back when I was electrified with the discovery, that she'd texted him but he hadn't reciprocated, I'd spurned his apologies. But over time, I replay his words, and I believe them, and they've appeased me. But he was equally angry with me, for not having faith in him to do right by Leo, for thinking that I knew better because of my dad and all that we'd been through. I suppose that he has forgiven me my own mistakes now, too. I see it in the way he sometimes starts to make overtures, but then falters, and since neither one of us has built a bridge back to the other, I meet with Susan McMahon. I contemplate how you divide a lifetime. I worry about taking Monster to the vet on my own. Someone from my team would come, surely, but those are not the people I want to call family, even if I'm forced to by default now. The doorbell rings today, and I jump, worried that it is Ben, worried that though I invited him, I'm unprepared, as always, to face him with our newly redrawn lines. But it's only Daisy, with a poinsettia in one arm, a bundt cake in another. "I told you not to bring anything," I say, kissing her hello. I've seen more of her since Ben and I split. She, Mariana, my old friend from P.F. Chang's, and I will elude the photographers and, at sunset, sneak into a quiet restaurant with a view of the horizon. Or she and I will power walk into the hills of Malibu or Bel Air or wherever we can go unrecognized. We'll pretend that things were like they used to be back when we did these things all the time because we didn't have other obligations, because we didn't have broken hearts. Mariana had eloped in Vegas last year, and the marriage spiraled south 6 months afterward. I never show up for a party empty-handed. She glances up the staircase. Is Ben here yet? I shake my head. No. Breathe, she says, her hand lingering on my shoulder. I nod, blinking back a surprising burst of tears. The caterer I've hired is in the kitchen, so Piper delivers Emily to my dad in the screening room, and she, Daisy, and I pour ourselves two full glasses of mulled and spiked cider and wind our way to the patio. It's Christmas, but in Los Angeles it's 73 and clear, like any other day, like every other day. I've had the gardeners braid white lights around the trees in the back and the frame of the entire house, and as the sun sinks lower, they begin to glow like a parade of fireflies throughout the yard. It's like it's not real here, Piper says. This is so far removed from any aspect of real life. Daisy shrugs. That's the irony of this town. You come for the glitter, you really get the gritty underbelly. It doesn't look like there's much grit around here. Piper laughs, waving an arm toward our massive backyard, the tennis court, the heated pool, the guest house. You don't see the sacrifice, Daisy says. You don't see that we open up our guts to get where we are. The lecherous directors, the constant rejection. I'm sorry, I say to Piper, interrupting her because I'm suddenly embarrassed for all this excess and for Daisy making it appear as if this is a hardship. Don't apologize, Piper says. I love it here, don't get me wrong. It's just that it feels like something from a movie set, that's all. But if you asked me to move in, I wouldn't say no. She leans over and squeezes my knee. You've just come a long way from Canton, Tate. I guess I always wanted to get as far away as I could. She makes a face like I've hurt her. Not from you, Pipes, from there. If you can dream it, you can be it. She says in a faraway voice that reminds me of home. She laughs, shakes her head. Mom. I gaze up to the white lights and wonder if maybe I hadn't been clear on what I dreamed. Ben lets himself in and finds us on the patio. It was part of our mediation, the custody. He can have a key, though he can't come and go as he pleases as if he still lives here. But it's a sign of good faith, and it's intended to be a symbolic gesture so Joey doesn't feel like his parents are at war. Hey, he says, and we all tilt our heads toward him as if he is a familiar stranger.
I'm just here. Just letting you know.
Joey's with my dad in the screening room. He nods.
My mom went to find them.
He plunges his hands into his pockets as Piper stands too quickly and kisses his cheek hello, reaches for an awkward hug. She's forgiven Ben for Amanda, too, and now she's encouraged me to take a breath, to slow down the divorce papers. But Piper relies on Scooter in ways that I never did with Ben, and I tell myself that this makes her more vulnerable, more romantic in her worldview. Piper excuses herself to the kitchen, and Daisy scampers out behind her.
You okay?
Ben asks when we're alone. I'm worried about Monster, I say. His back legs aren't doing well. He can't do the stairs. I don't tell him about how he pees on the rug involuntarily, how I sometimes have to bring his food to him because he's too listless to rise.
Have you spoken with the vet?
Of course I've spoken with the vet, I say, then chide myself. I'm not trying to be shrill, it's just the easiest way. The default between us now. Yes, I say more gently. I mean, he's fine for now, but...
Listen.
Ben steps closer.
I'll come with you. We'll do it together.
It's okay, I say. I mean, it's fine.
Tate, he's ours.
I want to say, I've spent so much time dividing our life together that I don't know what that means anymore. Instead, I head toward the kitchen. I head towards safety.
35. Ben. October 1999. Daisy put me up to it. I'd run into her at Ray's Pizza earlier in the night, and she told me she was working a shift that night at a bar off 4th, Dive In, and told me to swing by for a beer. Amanda was at the hospital until 11 o'clock, so I figured what the hell. I buzzed Amanda, who said she'd stop over when she got off. Then we could go crash at her place, which wasn't too far, just a couple blocks over on Astor. Easier than me shooting uptown to my parents on the subway, which was unreliable at night. And besides, it was my parents, not exactly living their dream. But that had been part of the deal with my dad. He wanted me to be a banker, or a lawyer, or head to business school after Williams. Like the writing was on the wall with my liberal arts education, my major in English, that I wasn't going to amount to much, at least by my father's definition. My mom convinced him, pay for grad school, at least most of it, but don't subsidize my lifestyle. I took out a small loan and landed at my parents' doorstep, the ink on my diploma barely dry. Leo still lived at home back then too, so it was like old times, only now he reeked of weed and had beer on his breath. But my mom pretended not to notice because he got by at Dalton and played on the football team, and also he was the baby and we loved him for it. That's just Leo, we'd grown used to saying with a shrug. My dad indulged him because Leo did well enough to likely matriculate to Columbia, where my dad was occasionally a guest lecturer and had connections, and because Leo had a slight inkling of maybe becoming the banker my father had hoped I'd become, or maybe a lawyer at my dad's firm. God help us if Leo's ever the one to have to bail someone out, I said to my mom one night last year, after Leo had swung down from campus to have her do his laundry. Benjamin, stop it, she replied, folding his t-shirts. Your brother has so much untapped potential. She shook her head, pressed her hands on the cotton to smooth out the wrinkles. He can do anything one day. Then she added, you too, Benny. You too. Daisy's shift is ending and my beer is getting warm and Amanda hasn't shown. There's a payphone in the back of the bar and I debate trying the hospital, but I know what she'll say. Something came up. They needed me. I couldn't help it. I'll say, okay, I get it. I try not to take it personally, like my mom's backhanded compliments. You look like you need to have some fun, Daisy had said when she proposed the plan. I'm running a bet with my friend. Stay until midnight, and when she asks for your phone number, refuse to give it to her. Weird bet, I said. Part of our acting process. She scooped up a handful of pretzels and popped them in her mouth. Helps us pretend we're anyone but ourselves. Actresses are very strange, I laughed. You don't know the half of it. She untied her apron from her waist, waved over her friend, then passed the apron to her. I spend the better part of the hour checking the door, swiveling my neck so often a muscle pinches. I should say something to Amanda, tell her how much it annoys me when she just goes AWOL, but I hate getting into it, the confrontation, the fights. We met through mutual friends at a Yankees game 2 summers ago. A Goldman analyst buddy had been released into the wild for the night, and his partner had given him the Goldman box. 15 of us were invited. Amanda and I hit it off immediately. We were all hot dogs and kettle corn and cold beer for the 3-hour stretch of the game. Every once in a while, she'd stop to look out on the field and yell, Jeter, you're such a little bitch! But she was from Boston and a Red Sox fan, so I forgave this. Besides, her fiery attitude was perfectly in line with her red hair, her zeal. She was passionate about her med school. She was passionate about politics. We were in the midterm election cycle that year. It was only surprising that she was just as passionate about me. We took the subway home together, with everyone really, and when I went to exit at my parents' stop, she said, No, you're not getting off here. Astor Place is your stop. And so I abided. But now it's nearly midnight, and my neck hurts and my beer is flat and warm. I promised Daisy that I'd stay until her friend, Tatum, who was wiping down the bar and shutting down some girl I recognize as the sister of an asshole I went to high school with, loses the bet. Bitch, the girl yells at Tatum, who looks on with mild interest, the epitome of cool, not rattled in any way. I watch her for a beat, as that asshole's sister falls off her stool into the ground, and I'm struck by the fact that Tatum's face doesn't flinch for even the tiniest of seconds. I remember that asshole, how I'd be reading in the library and he'd come by and shove my book to the floor, and how I was dating Paige Brewer and he wanted to sleep with her, so he told me that she left her underwear in his locker. He taunt me, cajole me, and never once did my face not flinch. Never did I shake him off so completely, like Tatum is able to shake off his sister now. She grabs her towel and wipes down the bar, and I wonder what I could learn from her, what she could teach me. I hope you don't take her personally, I say. I went to high school with her older brother. I think being an asshole is genetic. She laughs at this, throws her head back like it's the funniest thing she's ever heard, I'm great at writing drama, milking emotion out of real life, but I've never been a comedian. Amanda never finds me gut-busting hilarious. Something needy swells in me. More. Free refill for you, she says. I wave her off, though not because I want to. I'm just trying to be responsible. I have an early shoot, and also she makes me uneasy. Like, I'm sitting here waiting for Amanda, but want to be sitting here talking to her. I've never been disloyal, never even considered being unfaithful. I make a mental leap, to me unbuttoning Tatum's shirt, kissing the nape of her neck, and then press it to the back of my brain. No. I don't need another, I say. I'm on my way out.
You turn into a pumpkin before midnight?
She's closer now, and I can see how beautiful she is. Long brown hair tied up in a bun. Sharp green eyes that probably veer toward hazel when the sky is overcast. She has a dimple on one cheek, a fan of freckles on her nose. Not dark enough that she couldn't cover them up, but tonight she lets them breathe. I imagine, again, taking off her shirt. Nah, just, I have an early shoot tomorrow, and the person I was meeting tonight never showed.
A shoot? I'm intrigued, she says.
Grad student.
Are you a Tish? I've never seen you before. I'm there for theater.
I'm there for writing. I'm F.A. You know, about to set the world on fire as the next big screenwriter. Shit, what a stupid fucking thing to say. Selling myself short, listening to the voice of my dad in my ear. I add, or something like that. I don't know. Talk to my parents and they'll tell you I gave up my very lucrative analyst position at Morgan Stanley for a graduate degree in film.
Banking boys are so boring. No wonder you quit.
She smiles and her dimple craters. And now I'm on to removing everything she has on, stripping her naked.
Tell your parents to screw themselves.
I'm still living with them, so that's a little hard.
Fuck, 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 fuck. Why am I saying all this?
I play this off like I'm joking, like I'm not sitting here exposing all of my shortcomings to the most intoxicating woman I've met since, well, since that Yankees game with Amanda.
Yikes. She says.
Tell me about it. I laugh, wave a hand, recover.
Tatum Connolly.
She extends a hand and I clasp it. Don't want to let it go. Ben Livingston. She winces when I do indeed hold on for a moment too long. Sorry, habit. Trained that way by my dad since I was 6.
Fun childhood.
My dad's only paying for grad school on the promise that I win an Oscar. I offer, surprised to hear how quickly I share this confession.
But she grins and says, so, win an Oscar.
Like it's nothing. Like it's not the finish line, the nearly unattainable triumph my father expects. Okay. I grin back because I like her breeziness, her candor. Now you sound like him. If you're gonna do something, Benjamin, you better at least be the best.
There are worse role models,
she says. And something like sadness washes over her for a beat before she sheds it. I'm probably making it sound worse than it is. I am. Mostly I love my parents, love my childhood. No one is perfect, we all did our best. You know, to make you feel sorry for me or something.
Fun childhoods are overrated, she says,
then chews on her lip, lost in that same trail of thought that she doesn't give me access to.
But why would you want me to feel sorry for you?
Oh, I don't know. So when you get my phone number, you might take pity on me and actually call. I say. Daisy kicks me from underneath my side of the bar.
Come on,
she says, incredulous.
Come on what?
I know I'm flirting now, in spite of Amanda, in spite of my previously unwavering loyalty, to Paige Brewer, to Melissa Thompson, college, to Felicia Hollis, also college, to Amanda.
What makes you think I want your phone number? She asks. And even if I did want your phone number, why then wouldn't I call it? For your information, as a female bartender, I get numbers thrown at me all the time.
She's rattled. I've been the one to rattle her. I picture her naked now, me beside her.
Well, good, because I don't hand out my number to strangers. I grin.
Daisy told me to drag this out for as long as possible, until after midnight.
I'm not a stranger, she says. I'm Tatum.
I want to say, I know. Now tell me everything about yourself, because that won't be enough. I want to consume you, breathe you, explore every inch of you. Instead, I say, But you don't want my number, Tatum, so we don't have anything to worry about.
Well, I don't want your number, in fact.
Perfect, I reply.
Great,
she says.
Then, well, what if I do want your number?
I already told you. I don't give my number out to strangers who scare me. God, do I want to give her my number.
Something else you learned in your childhood?
They trained me well.
What if I'm not a stranger, she says. What if I tell you something about my own less-than-fun childhood that assures that I'm just Tatum, your local friendly bartender?
I'll consider it.
I started working when I was 12. I've had a job ever since, she says. So, no fun for me.
Nope. I try to shut that down quickly, worried she'll ask me about my own work experience, which is shamefully lacking. A camp counselor for a summer, teaching racquetball for another. I've never calloused my hands, never worried about a paycheck. Certainly never slung drinks for assholish NYU trust fund brats.
Oh, come on, she says. Are you going to make me beg?
Yes, I say. Please beg. Please ask me to do whatever you want me to do. I'm sold. I am going to make you beg. Very much so. Come on, give me your best begging face. Daisy clutches my shin, then pulls herself up to eye level, tears building, then spilling down her cheeks. She grabs my arm to steady herself against the onslaught of her laughter.
What?
Tatum looks from her to me, then back to her.
Were you, like, crouching underneath the bar, listening to this the whole time? I don't... What the hell, Daisy?
Daisy catches her breath and sputters. Then finally,
Tatum, Ben, Tatum. And just so you know, you lost.
They both look at the clock on the back wall.
I'm aware, Tatum snaps, and he and I met, as evidently you did too.
Then to me,
I take it you know her. Ben wrote a short about dating I did a few months ago,
she says.
I told him about our ongoing contest to get numbers at the bar, and he wrote it into the script.
That Women Are From Mars short? Tatum asks, her eyes wider.
That won an award last semester, didn't it?
I just wrote the script, I say. She starred, and the dude who directed it, another guy I grew up with, actually got the award. More deflection, more slighting myself, though I know better. Shut up, Ben.
Oh, you fancy Manhattan kids, she says. The next Scorsese's. But you, don't do that.
She squeezes my shoulder, and the jolt of adrenaline rushes to my heart.
Do what? Dismiss any notions of greatness. Act like you're not worthy of winning some award.
The adrenaline shoots all the way through me, straight to my cheeks. She's read me so well, like I'm transparent, like she can see right into my guts.
I'm serious,
she says.
Like, if that had been my film, I'd be standing on top of this bar screaming about it with a microphone.
I debate telling her to prove it, that if she's so chock full of bravado, she should jump up on the bar and prove it. But I don't need her to. I don't want her to. I want to savor this moment, her having my back, just for us. Our eyes linger for a beat, and then I remember, shit, Amanda. I stand abruptly, fishing my wallet from my back pocket, sliding $40 her way. I should go. Looks like I'm getting stood up.
Well, that sucks. And you don't owe me $40.
It's midnight and you lost the bet, I say. Suddenly embarrassed, like she thinks I'm some rich kid who is trying to do her a favor. I clarify. A big tip. An actual tip, not a wise-ass tip from that girl whose brother I knew. Is the least I could do. And anyway, I actually feel kind of bad about setting you up to lose. I really never do things like that. I point toward Daisy. She begged me, so I apologize. And please, take the tip.
Daisy nods. I did. It was too perfect not to. But yes,
she holds up her right hand.
I can attest that Ben is the rare breed of actually decent man who is not a total asshole. I've known him since we were kids.
Nice, I say, hoping that Tatum will recognize the truth behind Daisy's sarcasm, then hoping she won't, because she doesn't seem like the type who goes for nice guys.
She's not from here,
Daisy interrupts.
She's only very recently become acquainted with New York men.
Ohio, Tatum says with a shrug.
We breed only nice men in Ohio. Nice men who don't trick us into losing.
Thus the $40.
Well, I don't like losing.
She frowns, and the freckles on her nose shift into a new constellation, and I'm back to wanting to remove all of her clothes. And I do like big tips. No one really likes losing, and I think everyone likes good tips.
Are you making fun of me?
No, I say, shaking my head. God, that is the last thing I intended. I'm like the 5-year-old on the playground poking fun at the girl he likes. But I don't like her. I'm with Amanda. I try to recenter. I swear I'm not making fun of you, and I have Daisy to testify that I am indeed a non-asshole New York guy who wouldn't do that sort of thing.
We went to Dalton together, Daisy says. I've known him since forever.
I suppose that losing a bet and getting $40 is better than getting stood up, so my night is not quite as bad as yours. Tatum shrugs again.
So fine. I will see your $40 and raise you a tequila shot. On the house.
I'm not sure if I'm quite being stood up. It's complicated. My girlfriend's in her third year of med school. I mean, I think she's still my girlfriend. I can't quite pinpoint when I last saw her, so... I watch Tatum, wondering if she'll betray any interest. She raises her eyebrows for just a glimmer of a second, and I tell myself that's enough. It's enough to hold on to, for now.
So I couldn't have gotten your number even if I hadn't been set up by my so-called best friend.
She smiles, and her whole face opens into something radiant. Hey, Daisy put me up to it. She downs her shot. So I do too.
Well, I guess you owe me one.
Well, I say, I guess I do.
Now. 36. Tatum. November. I see Ben as he leans over the white fencing that separates the path from the cliff down to the beach. He tilts over and assesses, then rights himself and starts toward the steps to the ocean. I sink lower in the driver's seat, though I'm a block away and the SUV has tinted windows, which usually guard against the prying eyes of fans who recognize me, or paparazzi who need a slice of me whenever they manage to track me down. I've gotten better at evading them, figured out how to leave early before they plant themselves outside my gate, or how to barter for a good shot if they agree to give me freedom for the rest of the day. So for now, I'm alone, something I rarely am anymore. An irony that isn't lost on me now that Ben doesn't sleep on his side of the bed. I'd realized I'd forgiven him a few weeks ago. He'd shown up to get Joey for the weekend, and rather than abruptly stand by the door and make courteous small talk, or have Constance do it and skip it altogether, I surprised myself by inviting him in.
Really?
His brow wrinkled, and the corners of his lips curled into a smile.
Well, sure, okay.
I poured him a coffee, all black like he always took it, and he pulled up a stool at the kitchen island, wrapping his hands around his mug like it was warming him from within. Neither of us quite knew where to start.
So,
Ben said. So, I replied. There were so many things I wanted to ask, mostly, how are you, and do you miss me? Which I hadn't even realized were on my mind, or were something resonating within me, until he was there, clutching his coffee like he'd done 1,000 times in front of me before. But before either of us could find anything important, or even casual to say, Joey came rushing down the steps and threw himself on Ben's leg.
"Daddy, you're here in the kitchen! Does this mean you guys are getting back together?"
We both cleared our throats, and Ben set his mostly full mug in the sink, and they were gone before I could ask Ben to stay longer, which I'd found myself rehearsing in my head while he sipped his coffee, the silence hovering between us, the bubble of so much unsaid hovering too. I washed the mug afterward, staring out the window above the kitchen sink, wondering how that can happen, how, in an instant, you can forgive someone without consciously doing so, how you can miss someone without recognizing how lonely you were without them. It had been well over a year since we blew up, almost 2, if you start with that day when I told him about Leo, when I admitted I knew about the affair. So long that it was hard to remember who had wronged whom. There was Amanda, of course, his infidelity, but I'd wronged him in plenty of ways, too. Leo, yes, but also in the smaller ways that I chose my career over him, put him second. It wasn't that I apologized for my ambition, but I'd come to recognize that ambition and thoughtfulness are not incompatible. A year or two is a long time to hold on to bruises that you're partially responsible for making. This morning, near the Santa Monica beach, I watch Ben disappear over the crest of the horizon, down the steps to the sand, and then he's gone. I adjust my sunglasses and an old Tish hat that I used to wear when Daisy and I went power walking, when I had all that baby weight to lose. I knew he'd be there, though we haven't spoken in 4 days, but we still know each other well, or I like to think that I still know him, love him, well enough to know that he'd be here, remembering Leo on his birthday, that time when Ben told me it felt like the world stopped, and it was just the two of them and the waves on the ocean. I glance up and down Ocean Avenue to ensure that no one has tailed me here, that I haven't been followed by the long lens of a prying camera, but the street is empty on this sunless Sunday morning. Joey is at a school retreat for the weekend. The isolation, which I've grown used to, built around myself like armor, feels lonely, cooler today, and I want to reach for Ben to warm me, like the Tin Man who was looking for a heart and needed to be loved. I slam the car door and jog to the spot Ben just vacated, only a block or two away from our first place together, where we lived when he was something brilliant with Romantica, and I was something less so. I squint against the glare that permeates through the heavy veil of clouds, looking for him. No, it wasn't that I was less than he. It was just that this town told me as much, valued me as lesser. Now I'm the most valuable player. Like anything as ephemeral as fame should define you, like it says anything real about who you are, whom you love, what you have to offer. I thought about this more these days, called Piper, who had a new baby at home, sometimes drove down to commitments with my dad for refresher therapy sessions, sometimes booked a therapy session just for me. But I thought about all the things we choose to let into our lives and how much of a choice that really is, how much ownership we need to take, how much responsibility. Ben made his choice with Amanda. I made mine with my loyalty to Leo, with my unwillingness to assume Ben could forgive him, like he had stubbornly refused to forgive my dad. I think we'd both choose differently if we could do it all over, and I tell my therapist this. I talk about my regret. I talk about my responsibility, that it was easier to dive into my work than come home and confront him about his affair, that it was easier to lose myself in a role than ask Ben why he lost himself with Amanda, that over the years, life got so very, very difficult, with my mom and his dad and my dad and Leo, and we lost so much, and that when we could have chosen to duck down in a foxhole together, we chose otherwise. It didn't happen with one fell swoop, and it was so gradual that neither of us realized it had happened until we found ourselves here, dividing a lifetime. Maybe it would be easier to pinpoint a moment and say, if only we could go back there and choose differently. But it's like a plane crash. A series of critical but small things all went wrong, and suddenly you're in a million pieces on the ground. I have never been one not to do the work, not to roll up my sleeves. But I suppose now I can see that the one place that it mattered most, with Ben, we simply didn't. I chose this. I just didn't realize I was choosing it at the time. I love Ben in ways that are still unexpected, still surprising. It wasn't what I felt on New Year's Eve, and it wasn't what I felt when we fell asleep under the vast Arizona sky in the back of our Jeep because I'd been stubborn and run out of gas and he'd forgiven me. It's hard-earned. It's complicated. It's also probably indelible. Though I am fraught with nerves and also the terror of heartbreak, I have told myself that I would show up today and tell him, lay myself bare, let it all ride on this. I still love you. I am showing up for you. Please, I don't want to sign the divorce papers. Please, can we try again? I head halfway down the stairway, scanning the dull sands of the beach until I see him. He is staring out at the horizon, just as I'm staring at him. Lost. I found him here, and yet we're just as lost as ever. He removes something from his pocket, cigarettes, and taps the pack against the butt of his hand, then pulls one to his mouth. Ben's smoking? When did Ben start smoking? I knew he dabbled after Leo died, but as a habit, no, I had no idea. I narrow my eyes into slits. How have we gotten so far apart that I don't know that my husband has taken up smoking? I know how, of course, but that doesn't mean I want to remember. Write something for me, I used to say, like it was all I ever wanted in the world. He never did. He checks his phone with his free hand, then shoves the phone back in his pocket. Is he hoping it's me? I reach for my own phone and consider, fleetingly, typing, I don't know what. I put my phone back into my own pocket. I don't want to text him. I don't want to communicate in parsed words like that anymore. I want to go to him, down the rest of the steps, tell him that I'm here, that we should start over. But I find that I can't move. Not yet. What if he doesn't want me? What if he says no? What if he doesn't see in me what I see in him now? A blonde surfer washes up next to him, then tucks her board beneath her arm and turns left down the beach toward the empty lifeguard station. It's dangerous out there in the surf with no one watching. Doesn't she know this? I want to run down there and tell her to be careful, to protect herself. I wouldn't, not just because it would seem paranoid, pushy, but because I've stopped enjoying the casual company of strangers, of small talk, or chit-chat with the Gelson's cashier, because everyone watches me now, and nothing can truly ever be casual. It's all documented and photographed, and even if someone isn't holding his phone aloft with the camera app open, someone is tweeting about it. All a choice, my therapist reminds me. Move to Montana, she'll say. You could. I could. But I choose not to. Instead, I've constructed this protective bubble around me and allowed that to convince me that I am safe. Ben turns, heads back toward me, and I duck, like this stair railing can conceal me. I right myself. No, I'm here. I'm here because I wanted him to see me, to know that I showed up to honor him and Leo and us. I inhale, exhale, steady myself, and start down the remaining steps, still watching him, still wondering if maybe he'll see me first. He slides on his flip-flops, then freezes, peering at a runner pointed toward him. I recognize the swoosh of her red hair. I'd spent enough time Googling her, even from here. She stops right in front of him, the surprise on his face morphing to happiness. Amanda. Heat rushes to my cheeks at the embarrassment of witnessing this. He'd told me it was over between them. I'd chosen to believe him. Fuck. Fuck, 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 fuck. I spin and race up the steps, race back to the escalade, fat tears startling me in the reflection in the window before I pull the door open and slink inside. I thought I'd prepared myself for heartbreak. Yet even after everything, I hadn't realized that Ben and I would really split in two.
37. Ben. November. Amanda stretches out in her sleep, rustling the duvet, shaking the mattress. I'd forgotten how she did this, even back in New York all those years ago. A lifetime, really, when we'd mostly stay at her place. The one bedroom off Astor Place, because I was living with my parents. How she'd hog the bed as if she were the only one who should be in it. I watch her sleeping, then her toes scrape against my shin and she sighs, eyes still shut, red hair spilling over my pillow, and drifts back to wherever her dreams have taken her. I ease out of bed and then peel off my shirt, then boxers, and step into the shower, trying to wash off the salt water in the sand. Also to rinse off a film of something else. That I had been waiting for Tatum, yet I left with Amanda. As if they were interchangeable. We'd barely made it back to my apartment. She jogged to the beach, so we'd taken my car, driven back to my place in some sort of frenzy like dogs in heat. She told me that she didn't really expect to see me there morning, Leo. But then when she did, she couldn't not stop. She couldn't not say something, because seeing me was the entire point of coming. Like,
I'd gone that far.
She laughed, then moved her hand across the headrest of the seat and rubbed my neck.
I guess I figured, what the hell? What did I have to lose? You'd already ended it with me 2.5 years before, so, like, why not?
She knew about my marriage, of course. Most of the planet did. I hadn't called her when Tatum and I split. Hadn't even thought of her much other than in the context of her being the last woman I fucked other than my wife, before I learned how to navigate the one-night stands that weren't too frequent anyway. But she had shown up, and Tatum hadn't. And I figured, maybe that means something. Maybe I misread what Tatum had wanted recently, to try to sort things out, to quit with the lawyers. And maybe I underestimated Amanda. So we drove home like a tornado was chasing us, abandoned our clothes by the door, and fell into bed like star-crossed lovers in a movie where they'd been kept apart too long, like they were foiled by every obstacle in their past and could finally now, desperately, be together. The spray of the hot water hits my face. I know it is nothing like this. I know ours is not the stuff that inspires fairy tales. Fairy tales do not start and end with your ex-mistress showing up and rescuing you when you are waiting for a sign from your wife, whom you miss desperately and whose trust you have detonated perhaps beyond repair. I wonder what Leo would say about all of this. Probably that I'm being an idiot. I can hear him say this. Dude, you're being such a fucking moron. Tater Tot is the best. Why aren't you just telling her? He would have been 36 today. His face, beautiful and unlined, plays over and over again in my memory. Who would he be now? Would he be happy? I lean over, try to touch my toes, stretch out my hamstrings and back. It's harder than it once was, though I'm also taking better care of myself, now that I have free time to go running, hit the gym, lay off the scotch that had helped nurse my wounds for the first year or so. I consider that happiness is a moving target. How can I possibly know if Leo would be happy when I don't even know how to define this for myself? With Amanda, with Tate. I had held it against her, that she knew about his relapse and kept it from me. For a long time. The better part of the first year when I had this new apartment, and I fell asleep with my empty tumbler in my hand. I wore it plainly on my sleeve like it was a bruise that shouldn't heal, that couldn't heal, and that she'd pelted me and caused permanent damage. I pulled out old photos of Leo, reread emails he'd once sent. It was as if this revelation of his relapse reopened the grieving process for me, as if I could trip down endless what-ifs that I had mostly put to bed after we buried him. I replayed all the what-ifs now. How I'd have sent him back to rehab, how I'd have ensured that he stayed the course. I flew back to New York for a weekend when Tatum had Joey, stayed with my mom and Ron, found myself sleeping in Leo's bed, milling about his room, which was unchanged from when he lived there, from when he was in high school and filled with possibility. It was a perfect spring weekend in the city. The trees were blossoming, the air had just rounded the corner from the winter chill. The sun was bright and optimistic. My mom and I walked the loop in Central Park, which we hadn't done since I was probably 11. When I needed to burn off energy, and Leo was too old for a stroller, but would fall asleep in it all the same as we walked.
You have to forgive yourself for this, Ben, my mom said. You have to let it go.
I didn't realize she knew. She read the surprise on my face.
I'm not an idiot. It's not like I stuck my head in the sand and didn't know about what he was doing.
He'd wanted to protect you from it. Hadn't wanted you to know. I swallowed. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to keep it a secret.
Yes, you did, she corrected me. And that's okay, too.
I blinked too quickly, tears mounting. And it occurred to me that what I'd done to my mom wasn't so different from what Tatum had done to me. Different motivations, perhaps, but tacit secret-keeping all the same.
I'm his mother, Ben, she said.
She still did that, spoke about him in present tense like he was still among us. Which, in some ways, he still was.
And I tried to help in the best way I could.
We stopped at a crosswalk as the park traffic whizzed by. Fallen petals from the newly sprung trees littered the pavement and swirled in the air around us. I didn't know, I said. I reached out and tried to grab a white petal that was circling in front of me, held aloft by the wind. I guess I didn't have any idea.
About me? Or about Leo?
The light clicked and we moved ahead. About both, I said. Though what I really think I meant, when I thought about it later, lying in his old bed, my elbows splayed behind my head, my eyes staring at the trophies he'd accrued at Dalton, the Bruce Springsteen posters he'd pinned up, is that I really didn't have any idea about me. About what I was made of, about who I'd become. About how I'd stopped aspiring for greatness because the less risky, less ambitious middle ground was all that I'd been offered lately. About how I'd lost sight of Tatum because it was easier to focus on all that I'd thought she'd taken from me. Leo, time, trust, than what she'd given back, which was actually just about everything. I'd even started to blame her for taking Amanda from me, all those years back on New Year's Eve. When, in a different version of my life, Amanda called and I wouldn't have been with Tatum, and Amanda and I would have found our way back to each other. Which is dumb because I didn't love Amanda like I loved Tatum. That deep, resonant love that isn't exactly passion anymore, but is so much a part of you that you don't know where it ends and begins, where to turn it off, even if you wanted to. My mom knocked on Leo's door.
One last thing I should have said earlier.
She pressed her lips together and seemed to consider what came next. I heaved myself to my elbows and waited. Finally, she offered,
"Your dad pushed you towards success. Relentless at times, I know."
I waited.
"But what he didn't tell you, though I think he tried to show you, and I can see now may have failed at, is that there is more than one way to define success."
She sighed.
"He brought me flowers every Friday, Ben. Do you remember that?"
"I do."
"He was a real pain in the ass," she said. "But he loved me unequivocally, and if he were here, he would say that loving someone wholly is success, too. Frankly, it's probably the one that matters most."
I didn't know what to say, so she nodded and retreated from Leo's old room, closing the door so quietly I never heard the latch click. I flew back to L.A. and started writing again. For Tatum. Also for me. It came to me suddenly like a tsunami of awakening that almost makes it hard to breathe. I spent years avoiding it because I couldn't see any of it clearly. I couldn't see her clearly, and I couldn't see myself either. That's the funny thing about memory, hindsight, nostalgia, and self-perception. Sometimes, many times, it gets in the way of knowing how to tell the truth. I replayed all our years together. I wrote them down. I started in the present, how far we'd gotten from each other, and tore through the years, and tore through our past. I tried to be fair, and I tried to be honest, and I tried to honor the love and the mistakes and the mess and the beauty that we created. I wrote about the road trip through Arizona. Not the one with Joey when we'd already started to splinter, but the one with just the two of us, which I thought was a catastrophe but turned out to be perfect. I wrote about her Oscar. And I wrote about my jealousy, and I wrote about the first time I viewed her through my directorial lens in Romantica and knew she was a star outside my galaxy. I wrote about her dad, and I wrote about mine, too. I wrote about how you build a life together and how you let that life together crumble into dust. I called it Between Me and You, because that was all that used to matter once, what was between us. And because maybe it should be between you and me, but we hadn't quite added up to perfect. So being a little off made me smile every time I read the title page. And I promised myself, because I thought I could still read her, but I was no longer sure, not since she started concealing parts of herself in ways that she hadn't in years, that if she showed up today at the beach, on Leo's birthday, I would finally tell her what I'd written. Tell her that it wasn't too late. Tell her that the weight of regret I bore on my shoulders was sinking me, but that I was ready to heave it into that gray ocean where I'd rebaptized myself this morning, and many mornings prior. But Tatum hadn't shown. It turned out that I read her wrong. I couldn't see her like I thought I could, like I used to. Instead, it was Amanda. I spin the handle of the shower, turning the temperature up until it's nearly scalding. I want to feel it. I need to feel it. It's been so long since I felt much